Welcome to Farcast. Now here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome to the Farcast. I am Michael Farr. Thank you so much for joining us again. And here we are with the first Farcast of 2019. I had to look down just to make sure I got it right. When you've been doing this as long as I have, really the difficult part is whether I'm still writing BC or AD on my checks, more or less 2019. So 2019, how about that? Who knew it could happen? The Farcast had a terrific year in 2018. Our guests make it. Our listeners make it. We thank you so much for listening and sharing and having us in your earbuds and cars and taking us with you to the gym and everywhere else in your offices and kitchens. It is a great privilege. We thank you for your notes and your cards and letters telling us that parts you've enjoyed, the parts you haven't enjoyed, particularly the guests you've enjoyed. I've got some of your favorite guests tonight, along with a new guest. But coming up to talk about markets in segment one, of course, is the great Jim Urio, who is the biggest fan favorite, according to all of the feedback we get. That's terrific. And so Jim's going to be with us, Dan Mahaffey on politics. And then Dr. J himself is going to be with us. John Najarian is here for our third segment. And he's going to talk to us a little bit about options and what the Najarian brothers are thinking about the trading landscape for this year. So please remember that on the Farcast, we think that money is hard to make, that research, hard work, and discipline are necessary for coming up with strong investment ideas for the long term. And remember that we believe that emotion is the foe of the long-term investor. Certainly it's been an emotional 30, 45 days in the markets. Jim Urio has provided us great advice to get through so much of this. Jim Urio is a managing director at TJM Institutional Services, a veteran futures and options trader on the floor of the Chicago Exchange. He is a pro's pro, an expert's expert. Hey, Jim, welcome back to the Farcast.
Thank you guys for having me. It's always such a good time.
You are great to do this with us, and we always learn so much from you. So, Jim, really, we heard the old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. Well, we hope they don't get a lot more interesting than they've been in the past 6 weeks. Good day today. Dow's back above 24,000. The S&P is hovering right close to 2,600 again. Thank you, Lord. NASDAQ even had a decent day up. So what do you make of all of this volatility? And tell us where we are as we enter 2019.
Okay, well, there's a ton of moving parts to this. And the most important part in my mind is this. When we were plumbing those 2,300 lows, that was 21% correction, which is kind of like you give that to the correction gods and hope that they're satisfied. And I, at that point in time, believed that they were. And I sold some of those 2,300 puts, meaning I was willing to buy it there.
And you said that on the Farcast, too, listeners. Just remember that you heard that on the Farcast when Jim called that bottom. When he called a bottom, you heard it here on the Farcast first. Okay, go ahead, Jim. Sorry, we just need to make sure.
This is so unusual because usually I have to pat myself on the back a lot, and that was a pat from somebody else, an external pat.
Your mother called me.
Greatly appreciate, by the way.
Your mother called me, and I said, "All right, yes, ma'am. I'm sorry, Miss. Yes, ma'am. No,
thank
yes,
you very
ma'am.
Much.
I understand. No. Look, you got it right. I'm kidding. You got it. You absolutely got it right. And it's. I mean, you are one of the longer-serving contributors on CNBC. I mean, there's a reason for that. It's not because you get stuff wrong too often.
That's nice of you to say. Okay, but now here's the interesting part of this whole move. Okay, we've bounced 300 handles in the S&P back up to 2,600.
Yes, yes.
Now, 2,600 was the level we really broke from. So my belief now is between up to like 2,630. Now, to go above that, I believe something has to fundamentally change. Now, something fundamentally changed last Friday, because going into last Friday's unemployment number, we had the China talks. We had a Fed that was tapping the brakes, and we had a belief that our economy was in somewhat of a slowdown mode. Now, those numbers came out on Friday, and they were very stark in how good they were in the unemployment numbers. So all of a sudden, it was a new discussion with the Fed tapping the brakes a bit and possibly them just in their head concocting a slowdown, and that's the best situation for stocks is if the Fed's going to be easy when they don't need to be easy. So now that's given us 300 points, well, probably 200 of these points in the S&Ps. But now we're at a time where I think something's got to give, and whether it be, I'm not sure if the government shutdown being being solved is enough to push us back above 26-30 into that range from 28 to 26. But I think if we, that coupled with some real good headway on the China story, and again, whatever comes out in the China story has to convince the market that it's real. Whether or not it has to be real, we don't know anything about what goes on in China. It's so murky and difficult to figure out. But if we can believe that we're heading in the right direction, then I think we go back into that range.
But I think we know from China that, I mean, you never know that I guess the only thing you know is that whatever numbers they're telling you are the numbers, those aren't the numbers. That's what you know about China.
Amen.
Whatever numbers are telling you are the numbers, those are not the numbers. But I think you do know the direction of the numbers, and the direction of the numbers has been coming down. I mean, if China's telling you that growth is slowing, they are so bullish, and they're always trying to wind a dress and tell you how fabulous they are all the time. These are not humble folks when it comes to talking about their economy. So, I mean, if they're telling you things are, you know, problematic, I think you could take that to the bank, can't you?
I do too. I think it's always, they're always, their proclivity is to overestimate, not underestimate. There's something that I think wasn't quite talked about enough going into this whole trade dispute with China, is that in this country we have to run for re-election, and they have to worry about revolution, and revolution is miles beyond just a dissatisfied electorate that's going to vote you out. So I wondered the whole time, is this the right fight to take of people who have far less to lose until, you know, perhaps they lose their life in a revolution when things get that bad, but I don't think we're anywhere close to that. Now, something that someone mentioned to me yesterday, which this caught me off guard because I hadn't put this puzzle piece together. I'm curious now is if the government shutdown, if it comes across that Trump loses this negotiation,
yes.
Is that kind of what China wants to happen? Are they sitting back going, okay, we believe now that he doesn't have the power that we thought he might have, and now we're going to play more hardball? And I think those two things, I'm not sure how strongly connected they are, but I think they're at least mildly connected.
Well, they certainly send a signal. You know, I have a friend, a businessman who just got back from China, who said that he was actually harassed. And he was harassed a couple of times in public for being a U.S. businessman, and what are you trying to do to us, was the message, which is kind of shocking to me. But there's an awareness, at least in Beijing, on the street in Beijing, I mean, among folks walking around, that there is a conflict with the U.S. and that the U.S. is trying to put the screws to China. And the average Chinese person seemed to be aware enough to harass him. You know, I probably shouldn't repeat this story, but I'm going to repeat this story.
Anyway. I love when stories start this way. That's
Don't
the best
you?
Kind.
Here's one I shouldn't probably get into, so I'm going to apologize to the governor now. But I saw an old friend at lunch today, Governor Bill Richardson. And Governor Richardson was in the Clinton administration, and I'm trying to remember. Was he Secretary of Education? I should have Googled that before the show. Well, I wasn't going to tell this story, so Mahaffey just walked in. Do you know what Bill Richardson was? Secretary? Energy. Secretary of Energy. There we
go.
Now, we'll take that to the bank because Mahaffey says so. So I talked to him at lunch, governor of New Mexico, and he and a Democrat and very bright guy. You know, also was also ran for president, was a candidate anyway. So I said, you know, tell me, you know, governor, what you think is going on. He said, I think that you're going to see I think you're going to see funding for a wall. You're going to see some funding. They're going to settle this government shutdown thing. And he said, I think we're going to get some progress out of China here. I see it coming. I don't think we're going to get everything, but I do think you're going to see a deal out of China, which to me, you know, all right. I don't think anybody, particularly Wall Street, expects the $5.6 billion for the wall, or now we're calling it a barrier. And nor do I think anybody expects 100% win with China. But if we get, you know, halfway there on so that the president's satisfied enough that the government can reopen, and we do have enhanced border security, which I haven't talked to anybody who thinks that enhanced border security is a bad idea. And nobody said that that's a bad idea, right? I mean, that could be really good. I mean, really good for stocks.
No, well, I think it should be excellent for stocks. And this is such a silly argument, because first of all, call it a palisade, call it Jack Russell. I don't care what you want to call the barrier. Call it whatever you want. It's silly. to hold up a $4 trillion budget based on a $5 billion dispute that we've been going over for a month just based on egos. Egos like wine. You know, a little bit of it is great. When you get too much of it, that's a terrible thing. And that's what's happening on both sides right now. And I think that as a country, this is what amazes me. If Trump, if really what I said before, and that China is waiting to see what sort of power Trump has, wouldn't it be better for us as a country to appear as a united front? And that's when I've had just like arguments with people about the Fed. I said, shouldn't the Fed tap the brakes a little bit to see what's going to happen with these tariffs? And
absolutely,
people like friends of mine would be like, well, the tariffs are stupid. I don't care if the tariffs are stupid. And yes, of course it's the Fed's job to look at all different macro policy, see what its effects will be, and then adjust monetary policy relative to that. I mean, that's what they do for every president. Why wouldn't they do it for the tariffs? I'm sure you agree with that, correct?
Well, of course, yeah, I agree with most of that. I mean, but I make the further distinction that, look, tariffs are bad economically. Tariffs are not a good thing if you're trying to grow your economy. That you know, you don't get, Reagan said, you don't get some more of something by taxing it. And so you look at these tariffs and you say, this is going to slow the economy. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to use these things as a big hammer and to get China to blink before we have to blink, to cause them more pain than we're going to endure, and thereby get longer-term concessions for the U.S. to end some of those very unfair trade practices. And ladies and gentlemen, we have been on the really bad end of some very bad trade practices for years. If we can somehow bring them back onto a fairer playing field, I don't think we're going to get anywhere near a fair playing field, but if we can get them closer to a fairer playing field, I think that'll be a huge victory for the United States. I think it'll make the threat of all of these tariffs totally worth it. But if we get into a game of chicken and we lose control over the tariffs, then that's not good. I mean, so...
Amen. Our mutual friend Larry Kudlow was in Chicago a couple weeks ago, and one thing he said is we're trying to get them to say yes to anything. Now, by the way, as a side note, to try to get my friends on the other side to agree to the fact that the tariffs and this trade war is in the name of free trade, that Donald Trump is not a tariff guy. He's a free trade guy.
Free trade
now, this
guy
might be misguided as heck in anyone's opinion, and I'm not sure where I stand on it. I think it's mildly misguided, unless it works, and then I'll take that back in a second. But the reality of it is, and you said it's being used as a hammer. It is a free trade tool, correct?
It should be. That's we hope that it's a free trade problem and that it is the right tool for this problem. I don't think, actually, it's the right tool for this problem. I think it just happens to be the only damn tool we have. I mean,
we've been looking
for suggestions for other tools to approach this very unfair situation, and we haven't been able to find it. Well, I hope Bill Richardson is right. But when you look at stocks and when you see 20% of the S&P 500, Jim, trading less than 8 times earnings, 20% of the S&P, less than 8 times earnings. You take out the FANG stocks and you're looking at something closer to 13 times earnings. These stocks are not expensive, even in a slow growth atmosphere. Do you disagree?
No, I don't disagree. And I think that that's a very important part of the puzzle. Now, of course, there is another part of the puzzle, too, and that's rates have been going up. We had 10 years of a period of zero interest rates, which, without any question, have led to a lot of malinvestment. A lot of companies like Sears, who are teetering on the edge, but were living because of the drip of free money. Now that that's going away, and the question is, in my mind, is how fast it's going away. So we got a lot of companies that are sitting there. We got a lot of pensions that are underfunded that need low money to borrow. We got a lot of governments that need low interest rates to borrow. As those things go up, you know, it's like pulling down the wallpaper in an old house. You're going to find some things that you're not going to like. So I'm pleased more now because I think this should be a very slow process. And it seems like in the last couple weeks, Jay Powell agrees with that. So I think that the rate part of this is overwhelmingly the most important story of the last 2 years. But if we believe that they're just pausing and really are just going to watch things as they go and they're not in any huge hurry, I think that's very positive. And then I think the fact that the earnings situation in the S&P seems relatively attractive.
You can see Jim Urio on CNBC and hear him more regularly than you can see me, which is just a crime that cries to heaven. But if you really want to see him, if you really want to see him in person, though, the place to go is Brandt's. If you haven't been to Brandt's in Chicago to try that burger, you're really missing out, ladies and gentlemen. I hope we didn't break you with our 10% discount coupon offering on the last show, Yurio. I hope that that...
No, I had selective amnesia when those people came to claim. Michael Farr, I've never heard of the guy.
Farr says that you're giving us 10%. 10% off dinner checks at Brandt. That's what we had. That's not going on right now, ladies and gentlemen. But we will have that offer for you later in the year. But if you haven't gone to Brandt's for a burger, you got to do it. Jim Yurio from the floor of the Chicago Exchange, TJM Institutional Services. You are the best. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be back with Washington and Dan Mahaffey on the Farcast.
You're listening to Farcast.
Do you have an upcoming function and need a dynamic speaker to engage your audience? You've enjoyed listening to the Farcast, so why not invite Michael Farr to speak at your next event? In addition to hosting the Farcast and serving as president of the advisory firm Farr, Miller, and Washington, Michael is the longest-serving paid contributor to CNBC. He is recognized by audiences, and his presentations on the economic outlook are always well-received. Michael has recently appeared at such venues as the Economic Club of Memphis, the University of Delaware, Matheson Financial Conference, and the YPO-WPO Economic Summit. Add your event to the growing list of organizations who have been informed and captivated by Michael's insights. For more information, or to book Michael for an upcoming event, please email me, Harry Jennings, at hjennings@farmiller.com. Or call me at 202-530-5608.
Now more with Michael Farr and the Farcast.
Love that music. Don't you love that music on the Farcast? Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am Michael Farr. We are here in the lovely Chatters Studios on a somewhat chilly January night in Washington, D.C., 2019. It's just fabulous. We've got a whole brand new year, a brand new Farcast coming out for all of us. And Jim Yurio, gosh, what a terrific mind and thoughtful approach to Wall Street. He's just the best. Dan Mahaffey works for the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress. He runs their policy programs and serves as corporate secretary to the 35-member Board of Trustees. He is just a hugely smart guy, Georgetown educated. Don't bet against the Jebbies, ever. he has written all sorts of op-eds and things for Politico and a number of other important publications. He spent time in China. He's an expert in intelligence. And we're going to talk with Dan Mahaffey in the new year about shutdowns, about presidential addresses from the Oval Office and trips to Mexico and what's going on Capitol Hill. Happy New Year, Dan.
Happy
Welcome
New Year,
back.
Michael. Good to be back.
Oh, we're so glad you're back with us. Now, you have been living in interesting times, too, Dan.
Yeah, no one got the memo that we were supposed to have a vacation over the holidays. I was driving with my girlfriend down to Tennessee, and all of a sudden my phone starts vibrating because I figured I could unplug, listen
sure,
to Christmas
yeah,
carols in
right.
the car. And then Secretary Mattis had resigned. And then it just kind of was one domino after another after that with these stories.
After another. Well, it's been very interesting. And we're taking a look at a meeting we heard about at the White House where the president stormed out of the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
What have you – give us the inside scoop there. Is that what really happened?
It sounds like that's what happened. You know, whether or not he banged on the desk or other histrionics is sort of depends on who's telling you the story. But we know that the meeting happened. He apparently passed out candy to everyone who arrived.
Really?
Yeah, that there was candy. You know, they have those little M&Ms with the presidential
seal. On his way out the door?
Or no, when everyone sat down.
When everybody said the candy when they sat down.
And he said, went to Speaker Pelosi, am I going to get my wall? And she said, no. And he said, well, that's it. Meeting's over. And they left.
Wow. So these are typical negotiation tactics of real estate tycoon Mr. Trump.
Yes. It's a real estate deal, walk away from the deal kind of action. Sure, you get that. But now we're having this where, you know, 800,000 federal employees are not going to get their paycheck. I think to put that in perspective, it's useful to think that imagine if Target stopped paying all their workers and add 200,000. That's the number of people who aren't getting a paycheck.
Okay, say that again. All of Target's workers plus 200, another quarter of a million people.
Correct.
Almost.
Wow. And in the White House, too, there was even the Washington Post broke it down where They were taken by surprise at the effect that this shutdown had across these various sectors. They hadn't even thought through what this would mean for air travel, food inspection, you know, a range of these areas where people are, you know, they're not getting their FHA loans
processed.
What do you
mean food inspection?
Well, USDA has had to pull back a lot of the food inspectors, except for those in the abattoirs themselves, but the other inspections of seafood.
Abattoirs is such a nice word for such a not nice place, isn't it?
Well, when you grow up in Chicago, you learn euphemisms to kind of distract from, you know, the Upton Sinclair-iness of it all. but you have these the inspectors are pulled back. So we just had that lettuce recall and outbreak. You know, that's finally been ended. But those were the inspectors who were keeping an eye on the recalls.
So we're
of
losing
food.
Those people. You know, one thing, Dan, I did yesterday, and it felt a little awkward, but to do it. But I would encourage all of you, if you're traveling and if you do this as much as I do. I went through TSA yesterday through a couple of airports. I'll be through several airports next week as well. I thank the TSA agents for being there. I made a point of stopping and thanking a bunch of them. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're traveling still and this shutdown's going on, those folks aren't getting paid, and they've got to show up at work to keep us safe. And 9/11 is not that distant a memory, I think, for all of us to be able to take a second and really recognize and appreciate the job that these really wonderful Americans are doing, and offer them their thanks. When I did that and said thank you guys very much, every one of them smiled and nodded and said, you're welcome. And they really, you know, a little bit of appreciation helps.
Well, to put in perspective, too, a TSA salary is about $25,000 to $32,000 a year. These people likely do not have a large nest egg to fall back upon not getting paid right now.
You know, we just saw a statistic yesterday. 70% of workers in America live paycheck to paycheck.
Correct.
70%.
Yes.
So it's not this is going to impose hardship on a lot of these people. They will ultimately, most all of them, get their paychecks.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes. And even the other one, sort of rubbing salt in the wound, the air traffic controllers apparently got pay stubs today that said $0.00.
Oh, no. They really did?
Yes.
Zero. They got them that said zero. Oh, that's a shame. I mean, that hurts,
but
doesn't it?
But it's also
in
a sense, too, that the in the administration, the people who are running Office of Personnel Management, OMB, et cetera, just aren't up to the task of dealing with a workforce that is facing this hardship.
So tell us what you think, because you advise at the Center of the Study for the Presidency in Congress. You are a nonpartisan organization that advises both sides of the aisle on issues that face Congress and how to deal with them. And you've also advised presidents when they come into office. I remember Dr. David Abshire, Ambassador David Abshire, who would even advise on civility and how to deal and reach across the aisle. Mm-hmm. So it's different. You know, when I was talking with Jim Muriel, we said, okay, tariffs are a bad idea, but this is the hammer we're taking to China to try and get some concessions. This is different. This negotiation with a shutdown is taking a hammer to a lot of Americans in order to, as far as the president's concerned, gain a certain level of protection for our borders and Americans, and he's raising the stakes to that level. But what would you, at the Center for the Study, do you think they would say about what Congress should do here? What should the president do? Is this the right bargaining chip here? It doesn't seem fair.
It's not a fair bargaining chip, and I think the challenge for Congress is that you can't let the operation of government become a hostage for future negotiations. So there's certainly a non-starter in going forward without some reopening
of
government.
You mean, so for whatever the next issue is, I'm going to shut down the government if I don't get what I want this time?
And think about the debt ceilings or trade deals or stuff that's going to be coming up on the horizon. Beyond that, in the presidency, you have to think of, you know, am I being boxed in by my position and my advisors? Am I getting the right advice? And that, for every president, is, you know, you have to avoid groupthink and that mentality. And if you're getting it from the Sean Hannitys, Laura Ingrams, and Stephen Millers of the world, you're being boxed in on this idea of a wall when it could be technology, it could be cameras, drones, all these other things that are actually probably more effective, better scanning at ports of entry. Those are the things that you have to do and decide, can this be part of a bigger deal? Can I put the dreamers on the table? Can
so
I put
how do
a
we
path
get out of this?
How
do we get out of this? You know, the president has a lot at stake here with his base.
Yes.
And we understand how the president talks to his base. We understand the barometer, his significance of the stock market as a barometer for his approval rating, really, which is back up. Okay, mm-hmm. We're back up to 2,600. We're back up to almost where we were before this thing fell off. So, how do we get out of this kind of game of chicken that's being played in Washington?
Well, unfortunately, the stock market appears to be a little bit like a loyal but battered partner of what's going on in Washington, where it sort of, you know, it takes its lumps and then comes back again to kind of accept this as a new normal in how things are going on. And, you know, when will it get worse and how will that affect the market is another question. Resolving this, there's the 1% chance that you have, I think, a true grand bargain on immigration, a Nixon to China type moment, in the sense of, a person has a heart attack and changes their entire lifestyle because they realize they have to do something different. I think, though, we see with what Pence was saying today, the visit to the border, they're laying the groundwork for that emergency declaration. And it's not, you know, it's not going to be a huge deal in one sense because there's actually 31 other emergency declarations still on the books, one going all the way back to the embassy seizure in Iran in 79. But those have never been emergency declarations because I'm not getting my way with Congress to spend the money I want.
Yeah.
So the declaration would allow the president to move forward, even though that would be probably stayed by the courts. And you could reopen government, you know, through separate legislation at that point. But then Congress and the courts have to say, look, the states of emergency are not designed for because you're not getting your way.
So, okay. So Governor Bill Richardson told me today that he thought that we would get some resolution to this, some partial funding for a barrier or something, and we'd get government back open in the not-too-distant future. Do you agree with that?
I think, look, there's a way to get some partial funding in there, but now, they're all letting the perfect be the enemy of the good. You know, they've dug in with such rhetoric of, you know, that it has to be the full amount, that it has to be, not forgetting that the White House had $25 billion on the table last January and walked away from that because they didn't like the court decision on DACA. But still, that they've dug in so deeply and rhetorically, I think that the stage is set for that emergency declaration. It'll look like action to his supporters, even though it's going to get bogged down in the courts.
But there's a way out of this that looks like meeting halfway, even though it might not actually accomplish that.
I think that could happen. I'm more thinking that he goes for the dramatic rather than the cooperative.
He thought we were going to get some progress with China too, and some kind of a deal with China. Do you agree with that?
I think the Chinese, it sounds like they're moving forward at least on agriculture, manufactured goods. We covered this during the holidays.
Yeah, but we don't care about that. It's not the stuff. It's
intellectual
property is the
and
stuff
technology,
we care about.
Access to financial markets. You know, that's the stuff that's still the sticking point, and they're trying to bide their time. There was a great article in the Financial Times about how Chinese officials are being told to sort of lay low when it comes to technology or their program that gives scientists money to relocate to China, things of that nature. So I think they're just biding their time, waiting to see what they can get. And, you know, it's at least woken us up because we need to be consistent with China. It's going to be, I think we have a lot to talk about on China as the year goes on. It's a year that ends in 9, which is never good in Chinese history. So the party will be thinking about that as well. The anniversary of Tiananmen Square coming up.
Well, we're biding our time, of course, on what's going on with trying to reopen the government. We're trying to bide our time on what we're thinking about in terms of China. But we're biding our time at essentially S&P 2600 and the Dow's back up. And, you know, it could be worse from these. I have a protocol question. We've got to go. Mm-hmm. Here's my quick protocol. So I saw Bill Richardson, and he and I have been friends for quite a long time. So he was Secretary of Energy, and he was also Governor of New Mexico. Mm-hmm. So I addressed him. I know that I'm supposed to address someone as their highest level held office. But if you're a cabinet secretary,
correct.
So I did governor. Okay, I always call him governor. Is that right, or do you call him Mr. Secretary?
I believe that secretary would be higher in the sense that he was in the line of presidential succession.
Yeah.
Though the protocol gets tricky with governor because it's an elected executive office. I will actually have to get back
Ooh.
To you. You have stumped. You've beat the geek.
How about that? I'm not entirely moronic about it. Well, Bill Richardson is such a nice guy. He is such a wonderful fella.
No, he
that,
is.
Of course, I mean, I could have said, hey, Bill, and he would have been just
governor,
as happy.
Ambassador. You know, he's
ambassador,
yeah, the
all of,
one
lots
of, those,
of yeah. Lots of those things. So I do try to get it right because I do have enormous respect for the service and devotion and dedication to our country that these guys like Bill Richardson have given their lives to. They really have.
So. Well, I will end with one funny little protocol tip. It was Ronald Reagan who would say, anytime you meet a congressman, just call them Mr. Chairman, because they're either a chairman of some small caucus you've never heard of, or they'll think the president just endorsed their desire to be chairman.
I love that.
And the congressman will always be happy to be called Mr. Chairman.
Awesome. That's awesome. Dan Mahaffey, Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress, and the Senior Political Analyst for the Farcast. You are awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be right back with Dr. J, John Najarian, when we come back on the Farcast.
You're listening to Farcast.
Thank you for listening to the Farcast. We'd like to introduce a new daily show for you, the Farcast's 3-Minute Morning Brief. Every morning before the sun rises, we bring you markets, commodities, and futures. Just the facts to start your day. The Farcast's 3-Minute Morning Brief. Subscribe today on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, or your favorite platform. And now, back to Michael and the Farcast.
You're listening to Farcast. Now, here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome back to the Farcast. I am Michael Farr. We are here in Washington, D.C. It is a chilly January night in 2019. Thank you so much for being with us, joining us here again. We appreciate it very much. We had a terrific segment to start out with tonight on Wall Street with Jim Urio from the floor of the Chicago Exchange. Terrific insights. And Jim's been right on this market, ladies and gentlemen. He's been with us for a few months, and he's been right. Dan Mahaffey, fabulous section going over Washington and trying to figure out exactly what's happening with these negotiations on the shutdown, the negotiations with China, figuring out what the Federal Reserve's going to do. We didn't even really get into the Mueller investigation. We're going to do that next week with Dan, so we hope you'll join us again. My great friend now is, this is such a treat for me, and I know for you all, my great friend John Najarian, the famous Dr. J., of course, from CNBC, of course, he was a linebacker for the Chicago Bears, has just written a new book with his brother called Follow the Smart Money. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got to do a little reading and really learn something about the markets. You've got to get yourself a copy of Follow the Smart Money. And look, this is really complicated. It's at followthesmartmoney.com. I can even remember that. So Dr. J is an expert's expert. In 1990, he's founded his own trading company. He's been registered all over the world with every kind of different securities and trading license. He and his brother run one of the more successful firms on Wall Street, Najarian Advisors, the Najarian Family Office, and you can find out what he thinks most days on the Halftime Report on CNBC. Welcome to the Farcast, John.
Great to be on the Farcast, Michael. I've been looking forward to it for weeks now, and here I am finally. Thank you, sir.
Well, it's a great honor for us. So, John, we were talking earlier, and we're saying, all right, now look, this market has rebounded a lot. We're pushing 2,600, 2,596 on the S&P 500. The NASDAQ has had a terrific recovery. The Dow is back over 24,000. Who thought that would I'd ever say that is a really good thing? But things are not all bad. What are you making of markets? What are you making of the world as you see it, both in your commentary on TV, which you have to really formulate your thoughts, I know, and get them to gel, but also from your perch on the options markets?
Well, I agree with your comments and Jim Urio's as well, Michael, that we needed to get a little more clarity. The market hates uncertainty. We know that. Investors can like uncertainty because sometimes it makes stocks get so cheap that there are just tremendous values. I think that happened in Facebook, in Apple, in Adobe, in Salesforce.com. There's so many stocks that I think just got overextended to the downside because of uncertainty. But you and I both know that a lot of that uncertainty was justified, and now it's not like there's an all clear necessarily, but there certainly is a greater belief that the Chinese are working with us to get to a resolution of the trade issue. That's one of the biggest things facing us. I don't want to downplay the government shutdown, but I bet both of us would say for the long term and short term, China is a bigger deal.
China is a very big deal, of course. And, you know, one of the things we were saying earlier, too, John, was tariffs are not good economically. I mean, tariffs are not going to improve your economic numbers, but they are the tool that we are using to try and bring this unfair trading partner to a more fair position. And I'm not sure what other tools the president has at his disposal to do it. I don't know if this is going to be successful. It's a little bit risky, but it does seem that we have their full attention, don't you think?
Yes, I do. As painful as December was, and parts of November for sure, for investors, I think the same kind of pain was felt throughout China in all of 2018, Michael, as those tariffs and the threats of various Chinese imports to our country were being blocked and or, you know, additional tariff put on those goods and so forth. Not so much services, of course, but China's definitely where we buy a lot of goods. And I think that they finally are have felt as much pain as they can, and that's why they've come to the table in a more willing way than they would have had these tariffs or the threats of the increased tariffs not been there. So I'm with you. I'm not a fan of them, but I do think that you needed to do something to get the other side to the table to negotiate rather than to just tell you to pound sand.
Tell us what you think. So as you look out, and I'm going to ask, come back for a shorter term view, but and you look out at 2019, what do you think we're going to see? Everybody I've talked to from Uriel all the way through, Barugian and everybody, the one thing everybody agrees on is more volatility. That one seems straightforward. But what do you see for 2019? What can investors expect? And I always try to have a message in here for Fred and Ethel, because they're perplexed when the markets gyrate like this.
Well, I think they're going to start being happier with the way that the market performs. I do think there'll be some ups and downs, but I think a lot of the – because you get volatility to the upside too. You and I talk about it all the time,
yeah,
Michael.
Upside volatility is a good thing. I like upside volatility.
You bet. Yeah. And I think we might see more of that this year. Last year, we started off with a bang. And we had all that upside volatility because the markets moved so strongly in the first couple weeks of January last year. And then we had that big downside volatility when all of a sudden people began to think that the Fed might be getting ahead of itself. And they've thought that for the last several hikes of 2018 and even the first moves perhaps here in 2019. I think the Fed is hearing loud and clear that not only did these interest rate moves cause businesses to cut back and cause consumer demand for loans to cut back, but that now they're worried that perhaps they could slow down the economy too much. And the fact that the Fed has acknowledged this, I think, is a really good thing. So I'm looking for upside here, Michael.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, John. I think it's a really good thing, too. But, you know, as you look at it and you say, look, the Fed has a dual mandate, and the dual mandate is full employment, as best as you can see it, and reasonable economic growth. And one of the things the way they measure that is inflation. Well, if we have 2% inflation and 3.8% unemployment, if I were the Fed, I would declare victory and sit down. I mean, you've done it, guys. I mean, what? Nothing broken here. Let's quit trying to fix it. It's kind of what I'm thinking.
I would agree. I think, and you know, even though the president has had his issues with Jerome Powell, his Fed chairman that he handpicked. I think Mr. Powell is doing a great job.
So do I.
I think he wishes he could have parsed those words differently as far as on autopilot.
Yes.
And previously in October when he said how far we were from neutral.
Right.
But I think now that he has had a couple meetings and a couple of those whoops moments, I think he's not going to have a lot more of those whoops moments. I think he is a very smart man, and that he's surrounded himself with really good people. So I think this is going to be a positive thing for the markets. He's not going to be the big negative thing that people feared, because I think he just got religion in a quick way with the way the market reacted.
Well, and I think he overstepped on a couple of, or he misspoke on a couple of things, which he actually did misspeak. I mean, most, you know, that's one of those euphemisms for he lied, but Jay Powell didn't. He just said something in a way that was difficult. What a horrible job to be under that kind of spotlight. I mean, do you remember? I mean, the Fed chairman grimaces and markets go down. I mean, you remember Mark Haynes used to look at his briefcase and see how thick the briefcase was under his arm walking into the Fed meetings. Do you remember that? I mean,
I do.
That's
yep. That was Alan Greenspan, of
Alan
course.
Alan Greenspan, yeah.
Mainly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean.
And
You take home, you know, your tax review when you're the Fed chairman, bring it back, you know, your personal taxes to the office the next morning, and the market goes down because they're sure that it means something. I mean, it's ridiculous. So
yeah, well, I mean, and now these poor guys and gals, because, of course, we've just had Ms. Yellen, Janet Yellen, who was a very good Fed chairman as well, and she was lucky enough to not have to move on rates. That's an enviable position. If you can be the person that just sits there with rates ding near zero or at zero, and you don't have to be the one to give the bad medicine, that's like, you know, Michael, you and I have kids. If you don't have to be the one that dishes out the punishment, the kids are going to love you, and they're not going to be so fond of the one that has to dish out the punishment.
Right.
So we all kind of understand that, and that's, you know, that's a benefit that she enjoyed that Jay Powell didn't really get the same deck.
No, not as
him.
Much fun. You know, he has,
yeah.
And I've known him for years. He is a great guy. He's a very thoughtful guy. We are so fortunate to have him as Fed chairman, I think. He's done just what he said he was going to do. He hasn't changed. He hasn't waffled. I think he's a great guy. Also, you know, as you speak about the women members of the Federal Reserve, Loretta Mester, I think, is one of the stronger Fed presidents. She and I are going to be giving a speech next month at University of Delaware for their economic outlook, 2019 economic outlook. And I'm so honored to be presenting with Dr. Mester at University of Delaware next week. You know, one of the things that we don't get to hear much from you on CNBC, and I don't have a lot more time here, but I'd like just a minute, if you would, as we have so many folks and investors who listen to the Farcast, would you give us just a sense of how options could be appropriate for the average person, and when people and the average high net worth client come to your firm, how do they? What's appropriate for them, and how do you guys work with them?
Sure. Well, as far as how we apply them, we're generally, Michael, using them to mitigate risk to the extent that we can, limit risk by, for instance, a put option, which is really just an insurance policy.
Right.
And we also use them for cash flow, because an awful lot of folks that are into their retirement years are using that retirement account, drawing from it each month, and the fact that you can generate cash by selling upside calls against a stock position that people intend to hold and perhaps hand on to their sons and daughters or grandkids, that is something that we do on a regular basis for folks as far as, you know, we call that a covered call. They own the stock, and we're more or less leasing out that apartment for them each month by selling those upside calls. As far as people trading them themselves, I think it's a great idea. I'm certainly not thinking that it's rocket science, but it is enough of a science that people need to pay attention and learn more about it before they just listen to me and it sounds so easy. Oh, yeah, I'll just sell some upside calls.
Right, right.
You need to kind of explore it a little deeper than that.
Absolutely. My friend John Najarian, a pro's pro, and you can hear, ladies and gentlemen, this is an expert's expert. You've seen him all, for years on CNBC. There's a reason that he's there. He's able to take these very complicated issues, make them seem simple and straightforward in a way that I really am always enjoy listening, and have come away understanding things better whenever I get to talk to my friend, Dr. J. John Najarian. If you want to understand a little bit more, perhaps, about the way Wall Street works, that book is Follow the Smart Money. And you, even you can remember this now, because I can remember it, followthesmartmoney.com. John Najarian, thank you so much for appearing on the Farcast. It is a great honor to have had you here.
It is my pleasure, and it always is to, when we have you on the show, Michael, to enjoy your insights. So thank you very much.
Thank you, buddy. Talk soon, and Happy New Year.
To you as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Farcast and joining us once again. We will be back again next week. We have some tremendous guests for you talking about the market. Remember, our friend Mr. Mahaffey is going to be back. He's going to give us an update on the Mueller investigation and what's going on over at the Justice Department. All of that affects Wall Street. And so on the Farcast, remember, we talk about Wall Street, we talk about Washington, and we talk about the world. Thank you again for joining us. We look forward to a fabulous 2019. Keep the cards and letters coming in Washington, D.C. with a very full and grateful heart. I'm Michael Farr.
Thank you for joining us on the Farcast. As with every week, we'd like to remind you that the podcast has been provided for informational purposes only and does not provide investment advice. Prior to providing specific investment advice, we would need to obtain information such as investor-specific risk tolerances, objectives, and income thresholds. The securities discussed and described are not a recommendation to buy or sell, and listeners should not assume that investment in the securities identified was or will be profitable. Thank you again, and we look forward to being with you again next week. Remember, you can subscribe to the Farcast on Apple Podcasts or any major podcast platform. Until next week, I'm Harry Jennings, producer of the Farcast.